morning, folks. This is Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live at 102.9 FM, whistlefm.com, formerly Whistle Radio. Sharing the Burden believes in life recovery. We are a life recovery group, and we follow the 12 steps of sharing the burden to support the hurting. All are welcome at our meetings. We hold weekly meetings in several locations. Check out sharingtheburden.ca to find the meeting closest to you, or start your own. And we need one in Stouffville soon. Now, we're going to talk about what's going on today. And today I have a good old friend, and her name is Pauline. And don't take that the wrong way, folks.
Young.
He's young. I'm younger. Not true. Pauline, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to have you back, and especially good in that you are one of the people like myself who go into jail to do service. And I'm excited about the jails and the way they're going and what's going to happen in the future. But I'm always happy to have someone else on who can talk perspective, and particularly perspective in the units they go into. Now, we know you go into a ladies jail not too far from here. I'm not going to get into names because sometimes we may say something that'll twig somebody to think somebody is somebody is somebody, and who knows what could happen. But I know you've enjoyed the jail, and you look really forward. And I know as we just spoke, you said you couldn't make a couple of times on the agenda over the next little while. And I know it's upsetting because there are particular people that we get connected to, and people who, you know, who know us, who love us, strangely enough, and we love them. And, you know, you've got to go there and do this to really understand that. So I'm not going to try and tell you that everybody in jail is lovable, but they are. But Pauline, just in before we get into some of the subject matter of the steps and so on, what really triggered you to accept or to even consider going into a jail? Like, was there anything, as you think back, is there anything in particular, were you like me all the time, sort of, hoping that underdog would come through strong and that kind of thing, or is it just something you always wanted to do, you know?
Well, not necessarily something I always wanted to do, but when we became friends and you talked about it, I knew immediately it was something that I was, it was on my list of things that I wanted to do after talking to you. After the more you talked about it, and the more it was like, okay, so what's the process? How do I do this? And, you know, I would go even if you couldn't go with me. That's how badly I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you've done that. You've gone on your own. And that, aside from me, I don't know too many others who even will do that.
Yeah, it's just so good. It's so great. And they are so grateful. And I just can't say enough about it. Yeah. I just think of so many people in there that have burned so many bridges and have really family that have had enough of them and don't really, have just said, like, I'm done with you, and probably feel, and rightly so, that they need to do their time and pay their dues and all of that. But inside of all of those people, they're just like us, and they need to be loved, and they need to know that, it's okay. You did it. You're going to do your time. You're going to pay for the crime that you did, whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. But you're still lovable. And in order to, in my opinion, to recover or to be changed, you need to feel worthy and loved, and you need to be able to put some things in the past and not carry that around, drag it around with you. And that's sort of, my philosophy in life is like, things happen. Like, my marriage ended, my first marriage ended, and I, you pick yourself up, you brush yourself off, and you start over again. It was my choice to end my marriage. But at the same time, life goes on, and you can't live with regret, and you can't live with all of that. You just have to move on, and resilience. And
You're right.
Anyways,
and if you stay stuck, you just don't go anywhere. But something you made me think, we get to see these people in a way, in a manner that oftentimes their families, their loved ones never get to see them. So we see them, you know, as truly loving, remorseful human beings who, you know, are expressing that remorse, and that, unfortunately, that is so needed by the people outside who've loved them all along and just, you know, they were going to break down in illness if they didn't kind of separate. And I understand that. I've been there too. And maybe you have. But, you know, we get to a point where if we're going to remain healthy, we've got to set up boundaries that keep other illnesses away. And addiction, as we all know, is a terrible illness. And, you know, when it gets into a family, it affects everybody. And every one of us have been affected by somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And it's brutal. So
and it's funny, you know, I think about the first time, my very first jail setting, probably one of the first times we were in one of the units. And we were there, and I think I put my hand, or I touched the lady beside me, and she just went, "Don't touch me." And I just about had a heart attack. I'm thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? What have I done? But then as I've moved to a different unit and I'm with different people, I see how badly they want to be hugged. They want you to. So at the end of a meeting, if we pray for them, they want to hold hands. They want to be touched. If you say, you know, do we want to get in a circle and pray? They want it. And at the end of a meeting, or when they come into a meeting and they see you sitting there in the room, they immediately come and hug and hug and hug. "I'm so glad to see you. I'm so glad to see you." They need that human touch. They need that feeling of, and it's just like, wow, you think, wow, I just can't believe these people are so amazing.
Yeah, love starved. It is amazing.
They're amazing, amazing women like us, like people just like
me. Yeah, exactly.
And did something wrong and got caught.
Yeah, and they got a lot more. They've got a lot of repressed love. So when it does start coming out, it's a shame though that the setting is perfect. Okay, you know, they're out of the range. They're in a place with us where there's more guards visible, and where we're a priority to the system. The guards are going to keep a closer eye on us, supposedly, than they would even the inmates. But we're in a setting that's more safe than anybody would ever even think. And it's more comfortable, and they're relaxed. They don't have to worry now. Nobody's going to attack me in this room. There's not going to be an altercation like could easily happen on the range, and, you know, where guards have to have several guards before they'll even go into a setting. We're in there, we're all together, and nobody wants to hurt anybody. And their families probably will never, ever see them in this, because they're getting their 3 squares a day. They're getting as much sleep as they want, and, you know, and even though it's rudimentary and things they get are not the quality maybe we would like, they're certainly sufficient and you can live well. I mean, most of them put on weight. They don't lose weight when they go to jail.
It's interesting to see how vulnerable they really are. Mm-hmm. Like they, maybe in getting into prison, they were tough, or they were whatever got them there. You know, they had an image that they had out there, and people think, well, they're tough or they're this. But they're really so broken, and when you look at their families and their family histories, and as they share, quite often, the brokenness that has come all the way down the line, and it's ended with these poor women, and they're products of their whole family experience, and maybe it didn't hit everybody in their family, maybe it just hit them, and your heart breaks for them, because and a lot of them, as strange as it may seem, are grateful for their time in prison.
Yeah. And that's not surprising to us who've been around addiction and stuff, because there comes a time when I hear so many men who suffer from alcoholism say, you know, thank God I'm an alcoholic. And they always say, I'm an alcoholic, even if they haven't drank for 20 years. It reminds them that one drink will set them back, you know, to the very beginning and then some. But the fact that they're there and that they're comfortable and can be thankful for being in prison or for being an alcoholic or a drug addict, because it brings them to a place where they know they've got to change, they've got to do something, they've got to reach out, they've got to reach beyond humanity in most cases, and reach for something spiritual, something greater than. And when they start doing that, we see change, and it's almost immediate. We rarely go into a room, and there might be 2, there might be 15 people, but we rarely go into a room that everybody is not encouraged to some degree, and changes with a different look on their face. Now, I tell people that, and it probably sounds, oh, yeah, well, he founded this thing, so, you know. But you see it, Pauline. I mean, what's it like? Tell the people. That's so important, you know.
Oh, yeah. I look at certain people, and there's a woman who we were just talking about who's getting out in the next 2 weeks, and I look at where she started, where a year ago when I met her, where she was a year ago to where she is today.
Yeah.
It's like a different person completely. And it feels good to tell her that, to be able to say to her, you've come so far, you are in such a different place. Mm-hmm. And she's so encouraged by that because she's grateful that she's made changes in her own life and that now she, where probably when she went in and I think this is the same for a lot of them. They don't see the future. They don't see how they can change or how it just, they're coming in broken and maybe angry and whatever. But a year down the road, what a difference these women are. And they're able to make decisions about their future, whether it's what they thought they were going to do when they left there or now it's a completely different plan. They've been able to come up with a plan for when I get out of here, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And, I look at so many of the younger women that are in there, and they're so sad because they feel, look, what I've put my family through and what I put my mom through and what I've done. And you know, you just, I always say the same thing, you know, don't worry about telling your family what you're going to do. Just do different. Be different. And that speaks, you know, I know as a parent who I've been through things with one of my children, and it's very difficult, and I always feel talk is cheap, you know. Don't tell me, show me. And that means more than you telling me what you're going to do. Just be different. Be a different person. And then don't worry about apologizing or trying to make huge amends to me. Don't worry about it. Just go forward and be a different person for yourself, and then I feel better. So, anyways, it's just such a wonderful thing. I can't wait. Hopefully, we'll be able to go into the men's prison.
Yeah, yeah. You must be due to go for orientation.
Yeah, I haven't heard back, but yeah.
Okay, that's something we've got to handle immediately. But that particular lady, the one who, I think it's the same one Pauline's talking about, she would come into a room and she was the boss. That's the way it was. And, and when we first ran into her, and she'd already been in there a couple of years, and now it's coming up not too far from 3, and that's overtime for that particular type of institution. And here she is, you know, knows now she's going to be getting out within the next week or two, and you know, has some plans, is really excited. She's smiling all the time, and you couldn't have made her smile when we first saw her, and you know
she was running the meetings.
Yeah.
Okay, you talk. Now you talk. Now you do this. What's your answer? What do you want? What do you? It's like blah.
Yeah. Now she's humble, you know. She asked me if she can borrow my glasses. She didn't just take them, you know, and things like that. But anyway, on that uppity note, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to go to my friend Jason, who always does such a great job behind the screen that's in front of me with nothing on it today, but that's okay.
Don't worry, Scott. I got it all figured out here. So.
But anyway, no, Jay's a great guy. Does a lot of good work around town. And aside from that, you know, whether it's bullying or organ transplant, or I just look after easier ways for the disabled to get in and out of buildings and so on, he stands for change. He stands for justice. And he stands for love, the thing that motivates most of us around the jail system. So, Jay, with all of that, you think you can give us a little bit of something to pay the bills?
Yeah, I think it's time to pay those bills, and I appreciate what you said. They're very nice words. So, yeah, time to pay some bills, and we'll be back here on Sharing the Burden.